listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, actress for TV, film, and stage, Miss Mauza Makkar. How are you?
Hi, good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I shouldn't say Miss Mauza, but you're Mrs. Mauza.
Yes.
You're like, oh, those are just formalities.
No, whatever.
And you know what? I do want to highlight we're both from the same part of India. Which is
that's
awesome.
The most important thing.
That's like roots right there.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you know, it's like seeing a soul sister when you see somebody from Kerala doing the arts. I'm like, all right, we're connected for life now.
Exactly. That's how this works. There aren't as many of us here, so we gotta identify and connect. Yes. You know, as soon as we find each other.
Well, that's my first question. I'm gonna ask you this because growing up Indian, you know. Growing up Indian, we have the same parallels. It's like all about education. It's all about nothing but education. Make sure you have something firm set up for education-based jobs and careers. How did you first get into the arts and convince your family that this was your path?
Yes, great question. Getting into the arts was my mom put me in everything right away. She's always had an affinity to the arts. She wanted to take dance lessons when she was a kid, but her grandfather wouldn't let it. I was dancing when I was four. I was in Indian classical voice lessons by the time I was six.
Wow.
So that was easy. So I had my mom really, you know, plugged me into the artistic hobbies immediately, which was great. And I moved to the U.S. when I was 12, and there was an audition for a musical, and it was one of those like summer school festivals where they auditioned middle school kids and high school kids, and they were doing South Pacific, and I'd never seen an American musical before this.
Wow.
And I auditioned and I got the role of Liat, and at that point I was like, American musicals, what is this? Let me absorb, let me see. So that summer was literally watching every Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, watching, you know, all the greats like Gene Kelly. And it was great. It was just like inundated with like American musical information and then theater and stuff. And that was my first foray into acting when I first came to the US. And so,
which is not easy because you were doing singing and acting, which is
exactly. Although Liat doesn't have any songs in South Pacific.
You got robbed.
Yes, I know, I did. But I think at the time I was like, this is okay. Let me just take baby steps into the world of acting. But so then I was able to continue that. You know, I was in all the school musicals and plays, and I was able to do that. But the Indian side of me was well and alive, and I was in all the AP classes and advanced classes and doing all that. And it wasn't even my parents, but by the time I got to college, it was very much me being, okay, time to be reasonable and level-headed, and I'm going to choose my, you know, my steady job. But I think I had a desire to marry the two. So initially when I got to college, I wanted to do finance journalism, which I think the finance was the numbers and analytical part.
That sounds like it could be fun, but I didn't.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. I only do finance broadcast journalism. So I think I still wanted to be on TV and get my makeup done. So that was my way of like maybe doing both. But I did an internship at a morning news show in Seattle and realized that I don't love it to work so hard for something. So I was like, you know what? Let me leave the journalism part because I don't think that's for me. That's not me. Right. And let me go full into finance. And I loved it. It was great. I did investment banking and private equity. I really loved investment banking.
Wow.
Private equity wasn't quite aligned with who I was. But when I was doing investment banking, I completely got burned out. I was doing 100-hour weeks, you know, easy, wow. like not taking any vacations, not seeing family and friends. So I took time off. I'd already lined up my private equity job and took time off in between and traveled to cliche find myself. But the fact is I did, like I realized on this trip, I hiked Mount Kilimanjaro and did a safari through the, I did a camping safari through the Serengeti wow. and Ngorongoro Crater. And I think it was the first time I was alone with my thoughts and had a chance to actually ask myself, Malzum, what would you like to do
right.
you know, for the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? Like, what do you want to do so you don't wake up when you're 80 years old and be like, man, I wish I...
Do you think, this is a parallel question, because I also traveled to Africa. We talked about this.
Economy, yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. And that trip was a monumental trip for me. I went when I was, I think, 20 years old. Maybe, yeah, 20 years old. And I went to South Africa and Kenya. Did the same
yeah.
safari. And it centers you beyond any other kind of vacation spot or destination. Do you think that just being in Africa, just away from Western civilization, kind of pointed you in a direction and made you just center yourself and focus? Or do you think it was just a time in your life that you were ready for it?
No, I think I took that trip for that. And I specifically chose Africa and specifically like a camping safari and a hike and everything because I didn't want to be reachable by anybody that I knew. And I think that along with being in nature and just being just, you know, we slept outside in tents. And I think that's what I still find a hike to be one of the most grounding things. I think being in nature, being outside. And I think it's the most thing kind of getting away from Western, yeah. anything from technology yeah. was what, cause it's so easy to get your to get your brain filled with noise from other people, from media, from family, from friends. There's just a lot of information being thrown at you about what you should do, what you can do, what you might do. And
right.
it's hard to take the time. So I think the trip was intentional. I don't think I realized I would arrive at this conclusion, but the trip was intentional as in I have to get away from everybody so I can think for the first time. So I did, and it was great. And it accomplished what I didn't realize how much it would change me, but it literally changed the trajectory of the rest of my life.
Whenever somebody tells me they go to Africa, it's an instant bond with me because Africa changes you. And then for you to have this prophetic kind of feeling and direction as to what you wanted to do, it makes sense because I felt the same thing. Like I just was so into the music and into every part of the lifestyle, like how it was just away from everything. You kind of unplug and then you kind of look inwards and you shed the layers of expectations, I think, that family, friends, status, whatever it is, puts on you, and you start realizing, you know, you're in Africa, you're in the mothership of the world in some ways. It's where life begins. It's where life began. It's where life will end. And you kind of see what's important to you. You kind of like tap into your heart. And did you have this moment of, I don't want to do anything else but act. This is what I was born to do. Like, what was that moment like for you?
It was a two-step process. It started in Africa and it kind of culminated. I followed that Africa trip immediately with a volunteer trip to Costa Rica. I was just like, let me just do everything. And in the 2 months that I have, it definitely, Africa was what kind of opened up the possibility of me not even staying on the path. I mean, absolutely what you said about shedding expectations.
Yes.
It had to start somewhere, and that's where it happened, of where like, wait a minute, I don't have to stay on this path if I don't want to.
Right.
And so that started in Africa. And then the trip I took to Costa Rica was with a very dear friend. He and I had worked together in investment banking, and I was about to join the firm that he was already working at. So, and there was no, we were volunteering in this like jungle school, and there was nobody else there at the time. So it was just the two of us just talking and looking up at the stars and talking about life and what it means and everything.
Yeah, right.
And he asked me, it's like, if money was an object, what would you do? And it was the little seed that got planted in Africa. And then I think in Costa Rica, when somebody finally asked me, I had the guts to say it out loud. Like it took a lot of courage to be like, and at the time it was like, this is crazy. Like I haven't acted since high school. I didn't do any acting in college. Like, and I've been in corporate America. I've been doing business. Right. And it was crazy for me to say it out loud. But at the time I was like, I don't know, man. I think I'd love to get back into acting. I mean, I did it in high school. I did all these plays and musicals.
Yeah.
And I was describing to him, Contact is one of my favorite movies. And I was describing the scene of where Jodie Foster is being questioned. And, you know, and she's trying to explain to all these people about faith, and somebody, you know, the person who doesn't believe in faith is expecting everybody else to take her word on faith, you know, and it was I was describing this moment and what I felt watching her. And he was like, I have never seen your eyes light up like you just did describing the scene of another actor in a movie.
Right.
And at that point it hit me. It's like, I don't think I've ever felt this way about finance. I mean, I think there are people who do, and that's not me. And I couldn't imagine doing something for so long that I didn't feel this much excitement and passion about.
Yeah.
And the seed got planted in Africa and it started to grow. And in Costa Rica, I finally said it out loud. And then it was holy crap. I gotta do something.
Holy shit. You could say holy shit.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, is this?
You're like, holy crap. I'm like, I know she did.
I wanted to say holy shit.
She didn't say holy crap.
I just wasn't sure. I was like, darn it. I didn't ask Nikki.
There you go.
This was.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you can swear. If it's my show, you can swear. Because okay. I can't go a whole hour without swearing. Are you kidding me? It's just, you know what's funny is my parents will listen to the show. They'll be like, you swore a lot this episode. And I'm like,
what is this? You said the F word 10 times, Nikki. Oh, yeah. That's all we talk about.
You know, I always tell people this, especially people in the arts. It's like, you know, the arts never leave you. You decide to leave the arts. And it's like when you were in high school developing all those kind of passions for art, and then you were doing finance, it's like your heart was still the same, but you were just like, I'm going to leave this and pretend that this doesn't matter. And then it took a trip to kind of get out of your places of familiarity to kind of address that. I love that because I kind of went through the same thing. I went through the same thing with music, and I was doing classical music, and it was like, this is not who I want to be. This is not what it is. Everything's about, like, I want to be an original artist and write music and be the composer. And so, like, I know what that feeling is like when you kind of, like, shift gears. Now you come home, and how do you tell your Indian family, guess what? I'm leaving this world of finance and stability for my passion for the arts.
I had a plan. So at the time I was, you know, dating a guy who was not the checklist of what my parents intended for me.
Right.
So I still continued to do private equity, but I was just doing things on the side because at one point I was like ready to quit, but then I was like, let me actually build some relationships. Let me see if there's something here. So I did things on the side. Like every weekend I was doing a student film. I was taking classes at Second City for 6 hours on Sundays. I was doing art whenever I could. If I wasn't working, I was, you know, writing a sketch or doing a reading or going to see plays. So I tried to absorb as much as I could, get as much information as possible to see, is this something I could do? Is this crazy? How crazy is this? Well, let me try it here. Okay, I'm going to do all these things. So, and my private equity job had a natural 2-year commitment. It was sort of expected that they hire you, you work for 2 years, and then you apply to business school. So it had, lucky for me, a natural endpoint. And it was a decision point of, well, do I just quit and leave now? Or do I stick it out for 2 years, use these 2 years to meet people, build relationships? And then at the end of the 2 years, I've had income, I've saved up some money. And then when I pivot, it's not like I'm starting from zero. It's starting from, hey, I know all these people who maybe know my work a little bit. They haven't hired me, but I've done 10 readings with them and now they know me. And so they'll call me in for an audition. So, so I didn't tell my parents about any of the readings or I ended up doing one play. I did the South Asian version of the Vagina Monologues, Yoni Ki Bath. Yeah. So I did that. Never told my parents about it. But they were living in Texas at the time. Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't think they wanted me to talk about, you know, hunt and everything, right? You know, I don't think they wanted me to hear me say those words. But it was a great show and I did that. So I started to get little bits of work. I booked a what is it, like Luna carpet commercial, that's you know, awesome. And I think called in sick that day to work because I was just like, yeah, let's do it. So I got these little indications. I was like, oh man, maybe this could work. So yeah. I got some confidence and I know at the same time, my now husband, but then boyfriend was like, what's going on with us? What's happening? I want to marry you, you know? So you know, that's like a whole nother podcast of like what happened. But once they accepted that I was going to marry, you know, a white guy who wasn't my religion, wasn't anything that they knew.
Right.
Then I slipped it in. Like literally it was like a weekend where everything was like, okay, we're doing this. And I was like, oh, by the way, I'm going to not apply to business school and just go into acting. Wow. And my mom was just, I think, you know, she'd accepted, she'd come around, but she was like, oh, maybe it's a good thing you're marrying a white guy. Was like her answer, because I think she was just so overwhelmed that right. This didn't seem as major.
That was smart though.
Yeah, like, so I just got the darts better. Yeah, exactly. I was like, what? Oh, too much. Okay, whatever. So that's how I literally told them. I literally was like, oh, and by the way, I'm going to try acting.
I remember, and I tease my family about this still. It was my mom, my dad, and my brother. We were sitting at dinner table, and I said, I don't think I'm going to... First, it was, you know, months before, I was like, I'm not going to do pre-med, which I was pre-med. I was pre-med in music. I'm like, I'm dropping the pre-med. And then it was like, hey, I'm going to finish classical music, but this is not what I'm going to do. I want to be in a rock band. And all the forks fell on the plate at the same time. And all the dirty looks, I got them all at the same time. But you know what's amazing? Now they come to all my shows. They come to more clubs and festivals. And they've seen so much more than so many of my friends that go to these festivals. And they love it. And it's like, it's they really turn the 180. I'm sure your families are the same. Yes. Seeing you on TV, you've been doing Chicago Fire. You've done NCIS. You've done all these, you know, recurring roles. You did a lot of stuff with stage in Chicago. Tell me about what that experience was like and how it kind of translated to you doing film and TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved doing Chicago theater. I still think I'm not as familiar with New York theater, but Chicago theater, these black box theater is literally some of the best work you see. It's these small spaces and it's just real because there's no room for anything fake because the audience member is just, you know,
they're on stage almost.
Inches away. Yeah. They're sharing the stage with you. So that was a great experience. I definitely learned. My first play was very much, you know, learning as I go. I had an amazing director and fellow castmates that really, you know, I think helped elevate me, but it was very much going on gut and instinct. Right. And after a little bit of that, I was able to apply and get into this intensive training program that the Steppenwolf Theater does in Chicago. Steppenwolf, well-known, you know, Gary Sinise is one of the founders of it. So that was what really helped me, gave me more concrete tools on in how to approach the craft. Before that, it was very much gut and instinct of like, you know, oh, I need to cry in the scene. Well, how do I do that? I guess I'll put myself in the scene, but then also think of something sad. I think I had a general feel of things, but I didn't know the words, the right technique, sort of surefire ways of getting there emotionally and breaking down a scene and things like that. So I was able to get training for that. But most of what I did in Chicago was theater. And I think it was a great place and way for me to really learn the craft and really...
Yeah, you're cutting your teeth and it's live energy. So you know when something hits, when it
exactly.
Does, you're learning timing, you're learning just how to work in an ensemble, and there becomes like it works like a well-oiled machine when it's right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like when you're just working with the right people and everybody knows their shit, and
yeah,
you know, like everybody has it together. It's like you see how like degrees of it can change, but when it's right, it just works because you figured out how to work a live ensemble and the literature. You know what I mean? So
yeah, exactly.
I love that. I love that. And you know what? I always feel like the best actors and actresses come from the theater, because I came from a world of opera where I was doing operas at like Dorothy Chandler Pavilion and doing all of this.
Yeah.
And you're just in this world of, you have to bring your A game. You have to have your act together. You have to be professional. It's not like, you know, you're doing a grade school like ensemble thing that you just happen to get a role. You're going there to work, and you realize this is the life. This is what it's all about. Tell me what that was like now translating to coming to LA, and it's a completely different game. It's all about TV, all about film, getting representation. Tell me what that transition was like for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. Yeah. I think working in Chicago theater, like one of the loveliest things about it is like, there's no ego. Everything is about the ensemble and the group and the piece. And so that was a great way to kind of learn about the best way to work.
Right.
My transition, I was able to get into TV in Chicago, which was really great. I got my first role on TV was this amazing opportunity on Chicago Fire. It was, you know, three scenes with the lead. It was incredible. I was very lucky to for the lead to be very kind and generous scene partner. And so that was my first foray into TV. So I was able to get.
That's a huge jump, by the way, just to go into that show, because that show is one of the big NBC shows, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And it was, you know, and it's funny because that first director that I worked with, you know, Dick Wolf, I worked with him again when I did SVU. So it was like a nice full circle moment of like, because that was my first role. And then SVU was my first big guest star role. So it was kind of nice to work with the same director again from the first time. So that was a really lovely moment. I found that I love doing TV. Like I love doing TV film. Like it's, I very much naturally am a very, you know, sort of like, I don't know what you call it, natural actor, but like I don't tend to, I'm not very broad. I'm not like a big type of, I don't know, like kids TV is probably not my strength. You know, that's not like, that's not the type of energy I have.
Right.
Like the TV film energy is kind of naturally where I sit. And so I found TV to be very much up my alley. I really enjoy doing it. When I decided what made my decision to move to LA was, at the time there were three shows shooting in Chicago when I was living there. And I ended up doing all three in the span of about 9 months.
Wow.
And so at that point I was like, there is literally nothing else that I can do here.
Right.
And
that's amazing. You exhausted the possibilities.
Yes, exactly. And my husband was very great about, I think you got to move to LA, because there was a little part of me is like, oh, my artistic home is here. I'd become an ensemble member of a theater company in Chicago. So I had my like my family of artists that I could create every year with. But he really pushed me, and I would have gotten there eventually, but it was nice for him to also be like, I think you need to move to LA, because there's literally nothing. If TV and film is what you want to do, you got to get out there. And I was like, you're right. I got to. And so I was lucky with my timing. My agent in Chicago, one of them had joined a LA-based management company. And, I had emailed her the day that they had sent the announcement, you know, that, you know, she's leaving the firm to join at the time called Principato Young. And I had sent her an email saying, thank you for everything. It was wonderful working with you. And she replied back immediately with like, can we grab coffee? And I was like, sure.
Like, yeah.
And I was like, absolutely. And we met for coffee literally the next day. And she was like, I want to sign you. And I was like, great. I have an LA manager now. So so this was before I got to LA. Maybe 2 months before, I had made the decision to move to LA in August, and this was in June. So when I got to LA, I had my Chicago agency and an LA manager. So that really helped.
Yeah, that's
get into the doors right away.
Right there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, at the time, that Chicago agency has now opened offices in LA, but at the time, you know, nobody knew them because they weren't based out here. But the LA management firm got me into auditions, and I could immediately tell the type of auditions I was going to, the size of the roles, everything was just bigger and better in LA. So I knew that I had made the right move.
You saw a difference between like auditioning in Chicago versus.
I did. Yeah, there was. And I think it's probably changed, but at that time, Chicago, even with the breadth of the actors and the talent level there, it was very much seen as a co-star town. You know, the series regulars and guest stars and the leads are always cast out of LA and New York. And you do the local casting out of Chicago. I think that's changing a little bit because Chicago does have such a huge depth of amazing talent. But at the time, it was very much the types of roles I was going out for were, you know, the Chicago Fire opportunity was an anomaly because it was three large scenes with a lead. The other role I did after that was, you know, paramedic, four lines or whatever. So it was an anomaly for me to get that Chicago Fire.
And I also find that the grind of doing those roles, like you're really doing what, a full day shoot for each,
yeah,
right? So exactly. You're doing a one day shoot and it's like, you're in this and you have to kind of like change gears when you're working a lot. You're either doing the same character and you have 3 days of full shoots and it's, you have to be consistent and you almost have to like create a vibe within this character in such a short amount of time.
Right.
Do you have any like secrets or like, do you have like, are you Uta Hagen in respect for acting? Or are you in Meisner? Like, what is your kind of technique to kind of get into character and create something so quick?
Sure. I definitely do my homework. My acting coach calls it the actor homework. I definitely answer all the questions of like, you know, who am I? Who am I in this world? But I really use, you know, all the tools, Stanislavski and Meisner and everything. Like, it's kind of, and I feel like each scene might call for something else depending. And that's how that was what was kind of taught in the Steppenwolf program. And that's how my coach teaches. It's sort of like, you don't know what you'll need. So know it all and just pick and choose of what works for you in that moment or based on your homework or what even happened that day. You might have all this planning, but all this shit happened that day and you get there and you can't think of anything. So, well, then what do you do to immediately drop into the moment and do your job, do your work? So, but I definitely do anything that's recurring. I answer my list of questions of who that person is. And that's the benefit of, you know, when you get to a point where you get to play characters that have history, that have multiple episodes and arcs and everything, you know, because it's hard to do it when it's four lines by paramedic. You know, how much can you do? You do the best you can, but I sometimes think those things are harder to do than when you have all the screen time to explore and figure things out.
I'm going to give you a huge compliment because I watch your reel and it's like, I love watching actors and actresses because it's like, I love storytelling. I love that from music. I love it in all art. You have a lot of power in your face. And I notice that even when you're in scenes with people, when you're not saying something and the camera's on you, you're saying a lot. And like, that's when you can tell when somebody's got acting chops, when somebody's like, oh, they don't really have the acting chops. So like, you really have a lot of power in how you express emotions and make it count, even if it's a small bit part or if it's a recurring role. And that's what it's all about, because it's like you're filling the role and fitting the space with the right amount of energy. And that's what makes you upstage a lot of people that I see you just in your reel. You're upstaging some people in your reel that are like the regulars or the big people. And it's like pretty awesome to see, because that means you have some serious game in your acting, and that's what it's about. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
We're going to play a little bit of your acting reel. This is your demo reel, correct?
Okay. Yes.
We're going to play it. This is Malzahn Makar's demo reel. Here it is.
I hadn't had a letter in a while. I thought maybe you'd... It's been a year.
13 months and a week. Almost.
You're English. Almerana.
¿Qué tal tu español?
Eres un hombre muy guapo. Que lleva una camisa muy vieja. You should let a girl take you shopping.
How's Jim?
It's fine. It's fine. It's not fine, you know this.
You look exactly the same. You look nice.
You too. What are you going to do about it?
I need a favor, Anna.
Can we just order a little room service first?
You asked me to meet you here, and I did.
Fine. Go ahead. You want a favor. Let's hear it.
Your family is here, Lorenzo. Your father founded the armory.
Father.
This estate is where he lived and died. What he left behind is your birthright.
What he left behind was me.
Believe me, I know the feeling. Until Tyler Lockwood called us, I didn't know I had any family left either.
What are you talking about?
My name is Alexandria St. John. I'm your family, Lorenzo.
I said I'd give you everything I know about the pills. Here's what I know. We tried to create the antidote, and we failed.
What?
Meanwhile, Mary Louise will be dead within the week. I'll tear your throat out!
No! I need her first.
You can stay here and yell at me if you want, but then I might not give you a car. I suggest you go make the most of the time your girlfriend has left.
Thanks for coming.
Curbside booty call? How could I refuse?
I need money for a hotel.
Ooh, hot. So I've got like 5 minutes, so if we're gonna knock boots, let's get to it.
I need access to the voicemails on this. It wants a password.
What's in it for me?
This used to be a simple phone, but it's had some serious upgrades. I went to root it, but the configuration of the board didn't look right. This thing is rigged to fry its own circuits if someone hacks it.
That's unusual.
This is DARPA-grade tech. Who'd you get it from?
They drank the pesticides in protest.
Jesus, and those were the Clonestra seeds.
When Serge was offered the job to do research for them through the university, he was obviously conflicted. But he felt like maybe he could be the one to improve the science in his grandfather's honor. I just don't understand how this could have happened. He's never gotten into one accident his whole life.
Mouse him for the win. My goodness. You're good. You're really good. And you know it. And I like that you know it. But you have to be in this business. So tell me this. I'm going to ask you a hardball question.
Okay.
Because you know in this world of acting, some of the coolest gigs are the things where you want to sink your teeth into. And sometimes the biggest paying gigs, and this is across the board, a lot of actors and actresses share this. It's not the thing that makes you want to sink your teeth into. How do you find either the passion or focus or even just the desire to, you know, chase one or the other? Or do you kind of find that both of them have to, you know, kind of fulfill each other to make sure it works?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and a hard question. Yeah, it's hard. You know, I'm definitely not at the level where I am. Offers are coming right at me and I'm picking and choosing.
Well, they should be. They should be.
That's well, good. Yes. Universe. Yes. No, I think, you know, I think as I've gotten further, there have been opportunities where I have chosen that, you know, if there was an option between the two, then I definitely choose the one where I'm like, I think this would just be just more fun to play for the next 10 years versus the other one. But I think usually there is something that I can find about each role. I have yet to play anything that has just been a pain or a drudge. I think I've enjoyed everything I've played. There's definitely, I have my favorites, but there's always been something fun and interesting to do for each role. And each role right. has given me a different type of challenge. And if it's something that I, if it's something that I don't get or don't, you know, it's not quite in my body, then it's definitely, well, I need to figure this out. You know, how does this become a part of my body? So then I take it as a challenge. But, you know, ideally everything is, you know, the meatiest and, you know, and you get the chance to explore, but there's only so much you can do, you know, even if the role is fantastic or it's amazing, you know, the filming and production might be that it's rushed and you don't really get to do all the things, you know? So many things would, I always say like Exorcist, you know, the first scene in that reel was, it is one of my favorites because it was one of those opportunities where everybody from the showrunner to the, you know, to the directors, the producers were all very much had acting in the scenes at the forefront. I mean, every time my first day on that job, my very first scene, the scene from that reel was the very first scene that I shot for that show. And it was my first day on set. Wow. And I did 8 out of the 10 episodes. So it was my first episode on the show. And the director asked me, you know, how are you feeling? Should I start with the close-up or should I start with the, you know, with the wide shot? Like, how are you feeling? Where are you at? And I'd never been asked that. You know, usually it's always a wide shot and they go down. But it was the first time the director asked me and it was like, what are you feeling? And I was like, I've never been asked that. So I turned to my co-star. I was like, what are you? And he was like, oh, no, whatever you'd like. And I was like,
wow.
You know, and it's just like, and that type of feeling continued. He sent every single day of that show, every Monday through Friday, every day on that show, he would send an inspirational quote or scene or thought to start off every day.
Awesome.
He would email it to the cast, and it was a special thing for the cast to bring together to think about to have that energy or that thought. And, I mean, it was beautiful, and I've never had that. Not to say that every show needed that or whatever, but it was just a wonderful, beautiful moment where actors were given space to create and to really, you know, do the craft. Like it was given the respect that it needs, that it is a craft, that it's not something you slap on. It is something that we work on that requires practice and patience and years of study. And it was given that respect. And that was, and
yeah, I think that's the art for sure.
Exactly. And that was there. And it was incredible. So I think, you know, not every job is like that. And not every job has to be. I've had many wonderful jobs that were different, that still had that. It wasn't exactly that, but right. that sort of my, oh my gosh, this actually happened. Like it's more of a, like, I can't believe this actually happened. Like this right. was what it was. And it was amazing. But I've enjoyed everything. I mean, even from one of my very first acting jobs that I did was a Craigslist ad that I answered in Chicago of this horror movie. And, you know, this guy was, you know, he made a movie. I mean, it was crazy. Like I had this crazy makeup on and I was this monster and it was wild, but the guy made the movie, you know, he made a movie. Like I've done where nothing happened, but this guy actually did it. Like it was, so it's like, there was something I learned from that. It was like the guy, you know, he wanted to make a movie and he made it and he hired actors from Craigslist and it was this crazy horror thing. And then he screened it in his basement like 2 months later. Like
that's awesome.
And it was in Chicago and it was like, and at the end of the day, it was like, this guy wanted to make a movie and he did it. And that is more than what can be said from a lot of people who have ideas and thoughts and never get it to the finish line. So I'm always with the attitude that there's something I can take away from each project. So, you know, if
sometimes that's why you're getting work. That's why you should be getting more work too, because you bring a lot of acting prowess to whatever project and you're not seeing like, oh, I need to give less because this is a smaller production. And that's really what it takes. And I think it's what's really unfair. It's like with actors, they're not always given that space to just create. It's like the director's kind of shaping their performance. And in the other part of it, it's like you don't even have the choice to choose which take. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You know, I'm sure sometimes if you feel real comfortable with the director, you're like, I really like take three, but whatever you choose, it's cool. And then you're just hoping that they choose the right take. And sometimes people get it. Sometimes people don't. But how do you kind of like conjure, you know, that energy to kind of deliver every time? Because it's not easy. And it always has to be a little bit different with acting, especially because maybe your cast member that you're playing off of will do something a little bit different. What's your process where it's like you want to create something that's unique and different and also true to the character?
Sure. I mean, I think it's, you know, having trusted scene partners and a director all helps that. You know, if you don't have that, then it's hard to play and do new things. You know, I remember for SVU, you know, and it's an, you know, because SVU, so it's, you know, a very intense role. So, you know, my character gets raped and kidnapped and all these tortured and everything. So, it's, you know, so every day it's long, and I was the main guest star. So I was there every day from the first scene to the last scene. And it was, but I remember, you know, at like the third day or whatever, I think the director had gotten comfortable with me where he started giving me the last take was always, Malzum, now just do whatever you want to do. And it was great. It was lovely to have that. So I think as an actor, you know, if it's your show and you're doing 10 seasons, you have that. But a lot of times, you know, the times I've been a series regular, it's the first year. So we're all kind of figuring it out together. Right. So, you know, I don't always have the luxury of being like, you know, and especially when you're a guest star, you are a guest, you know? And so, you know, and you have to see like, you know, what is the vibe, you know, and it's the focus is on the series regulars. So you're there to push the scene, to push the action forward. It's not about you. And I think that comes from the, you know, the Chicago theater training of like, it's the story and I'm here to serve as a story, what you're trying to say. So a lot of times you don't always have that. And then at that point, you just have to trust yourself and the director and believe that they got it. Because there's definitely been times where I'm a guest star and I do the thing and I'm like, man, I think I maybe could have done something else. But the director is like, that's great, I'm good. And I'm like, then I have to, you know, because usually, especially doing TV, you know, we have to get it done in 8 days. You know, we're shooting a lot of pages. So you also have to trust yourself. Like, you're like, I might think something in my head, but that might not be exactly what translates on camera. And if the director is happy and I don't, you know, and he's got all these other people, there's other people watching the cameras. Right. They won't move forward unless they got what they, you know, unless they get what they need.
You know what I mean, too? It's like, you know, like for me, like I'll produce a session or I'll write something or I'll sing something or I'll play a guitar lick or a solo or whatever. And it's like when I'm in the control booth, I'm kind of like, I know that's the one I want. And when I do a session for somebody else and I don't get to see what cut, I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, they're going to fuck it up. Like, they're not going to choose the right one. They're not going to mix it right because they may see something different. But I'm like, I gave them what I needed and you're just having to just leave it out there, you know. But it is refreshing to hear that sometimes you've had these experiences where directors trust you as an actress, trust your experience. And they have to because you can see in one take if you can act or you can't. In the same way that I know you know that sometimes you may be doing a scene with somebody and know when you are the stronger actor in the ensemble that has to, you know, kind of pull from other, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're only as strong as your weakest link in any kind of ensemble. And it's like, sometimes you have to give more because others aren't giving enough. And that's just the way it is. But I love that you have figured out a process where you can be diplomatic, because I will tell you, I'm not good with being diplomatic when it comes to that, because I don't have faith that somebody else will get it right in the same way when you know what your ability is and you know what you can do. So I think it's a commendable trait to know that you can give so many takes and know that they're all going to be good enough. And you're very free to let them decide what it is. But lucky for your demo reel, whatever take I know they had, they all were terrific, because you can see within seconds if somebody can act when they can't. And I watched your reel today. I was like, damn, she's good. Like, you just have something to you, and I love it. We're going to showcase something else. We're going to showcase your comedy reel. Here's Mazen Makar's comedy reel.
Hello?
Hey.
Ah!
Oh, Brittany. Damn it, it's me.
Vince, what the hell is wrong with you? Didn't you hear they found a white body back here?
Yeah, I made that up, okay? Look, I need you to do me a favor.
Me? Do you a favor? After you dumped me, I found out you had a love child and you sold a gym? You're a psycho. You're like Robert Durst, but poor.
Look, I need you to not tell anyone about the gym or about Michael.
Who?
My secret son. You just mentioned him.
Oh.
Look, I'll do anything you want, okay? I can give you upwards of $8.
No, I want to use a gym for a launch party for the new vodka I'm promoting.
What?
You absorb it through your colon.
Wait, you drink it through your butt?
It's called posteriore.
Okay.
Absorb the night.
All right, fine. Yeah, use the gym.
Okay.
Hey, can I at least come to the party?
I'll see you next week. Vince, I can't keep teaching 7 classes a day. My body is starting to burn bone marrow for energy. I have never looked better, and I am too weak to take a picture of myself.
V, it's too soon to hire new instructors, but I'll figure something out, all right?
You're a tough one to figure out, Josh Roberts. One minute you're super detached, the next you're super cuddly. Who are you?
Okay, well, the truth is, I wasn't totally being myself before. I'm actually more of a relationship guy, but...
I'm a relationship girl.
You are?
Through and through. But after so many jerks who only want one-night stands, I've had to put up this, like, guard and pretend that's all I want, too.
Well, no more pretending. You can let your guard down with me.
Oh, such a relief. Come on out, lifetime commitment, Lily.
I'm sorry, who?
Oh, that's what my friends all call me.
Because you're such a committed friend?
Because I want to get married, like yesterday.
Wow, that guard is just crumbling on down, isn't it?
Can I tell you a secret?
Okay.
I hunted your mother down and made her think she orchestrated the whole day, but really it was me. Can I tell you another secret?
Sure.
I think I love you. Just kidding. I know I love you.
I'm so happy you know where I live.
You must be Esther.
That's right, I am Esther.
Well, I knew you were confident from Dean's photo, but the way you rock that quinceañera dress in public proves it.
Actually, thank you. Gracias.
Whatever you gotta say, you just say it. Go ahead.
Fine. What kind of monster sleeps with someone for 3 weeks and suddenly just doesn't return their calls? I've been trying to contact you for the last month.
No, that's crazy. We had sex together 10 times, tops, okay? That barely warrants a callback. What do you think, we're married?
That's really bad, Dave.
Well, in all fairness, a girl's never slept with me 10 times. Like, that's pretty much marriage for me.
Mm-mm, no, I told her. I told you I didn't want to be in a relationship.
You did not say that. You asked me to pick you up at the airport.
That's because I'm protesting Uber, because you know what's been happening with them lately.
For real? What? Anytime you need a ride to the airport, I will do it for you. I promise you. Anytime.
I will LaGuardia. Never accept a ride from you ever. Ever.
I want to say I'm sorry. I didn't know you weren't crazy. He made it seem like you were a nutbag. I would not have tried to shoot up my brother's girlfriend. I didn't know you were sleeping together.
No, your brother was a total dick to me and thought I would just go away. But I'm taking a stand so he doesn't do this to the next girl.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is it more fun to be smart or pretty?
You are so cute.
Yeah. Can you answer the question?
Smart?
Really?
No.
Okay. Pretty.
I'll say it. We might look great there, but we all look way better now.
Especially Elizabeth. Your face looks amazing. Have you been working out?
I haven't worked out a day in my life.
I believe we went to a casino that night and...
Oh my God!
Crab!
I hope you don't mind. We took the liberty of ordering a seafood tower.
Excuse us. We've been on a crab cleanse the past few months.
That must have been hard to stick to in Tokyo. Well, you guys posted that great pic of your trip on Instagram.
Tokyo. Yes, of course. We've been to so many places lately, it's just hard to keep track.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We travel so much, sometimes it's hard to know where we are.
Oh, I'm sure Elizabeth knows where we are. Didn't you grow up around here, Beverly Hills? More or less. Reseda. Some say it's the Beverly Hills of the Deep West Valley. You can't even tell.
Now, kudos to you for not letting your upbringing drag you down.
I think that calls for more champagne.
Agreed. And don't worry, Javi, we've learned our lesson. We won't fight you for the bill.
Oh, no, you can fight me a little.
So awesome. Mouza just flexing the comedy chops. Yeah. Tell me, you know, when you see the finished product and you hear the laugh, you know, the studio laugh tracks, when you're actually filming, does it feel kind of like you can get that response naturally from an audience? Or because they don't play any of that, you know, while you're doing it. So how do you feel it affects your timing when you're just in that kind of ensemble?
Well, for the multicam things, it was filmed in front of a live audience.
Oh, that's cool.
So we do get that. So
that's awesome, and
that's like an amazing experience. Yeah, because it's kind of like you're doing a play, and they're also especially the 9JKL. It was a new show, so they were tossing in lines. Like we would do one take, and they would change lines up, and then we'd try the scene again with different.
Oh, that's cool.
Lines, you know, so they're really working with the audience to kind of see, okay, well, this got this many laughs. Let's see if we can get them more laughs. So that's actually was a really fun experience. So I think both the multicam shows, Broke and 9JKL, was filmed in front of a live audience. So, you know, but there's also, you know, there's also somebody there to kind of help the laughs along too. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit of both. There's actual natural laughter. But then, you know, there's a little bit of like, oh, yeah, that was funny. So
you have a preference between comedy or drama when you're acting?
I like both. I think drama comes more naturally to me. I think comedy is very hard to do. It is. And it is something that I need to be a little bit more, you know, analytical about. So it's, you know, it's something that I really need to like work through and figure out everything.
Is it a timing thing? Is that
not usually timing? It's kind of figuring out all the different, you know, a lot of times comedy comes in threes, so it's right. Figuring out the threes and figuring out the different ways to deliver, you know, the first, second, and third. So it takes a little bit more of script analysis and breaking it down. I enjoy doing both, but drama is very, it's not easy. Like it's like I'll read it and I kind of like know how it goes. While comedy, I need to do a little bit more analysis of like, okay, let me figure this out. And it takes a little bit more, you know, I'll need to try things in different ways. And especially for an audition, you kind of need to figure out. It's like, well, I think this is kind of, you know, I don't plan anything, but kind of like this is how it needs to be kind of shaped. Like it needs to go up here and down here and up there. So it takes a little bit more of like
nuance, little nuance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. While drama, you can just be in it and then the emotions come if they come. It's like, it's just like a little bit more, you get in the river and you just kind of go where it goes based on what's bubbling up. So I like doing both. I really enjoy doing both, but you know, drama just comes more.
You definitely flex with both. You got the acting capacity.
Thanks.
Now let's talk influences. Who are some of your biggest influences? Either you saw them on the screen that made you want to act, or they continue to be just acting forces that you're like, man, they are always delivering no matter what the role is, no matter how big or small. Who are some of your favorite actors or actresses that have influenced you?
Yeah. So my, you know, I mentioned it briefly, but Jodie Foster was my very first one. I mean, I saw her in Contact and also Maverick with Mel Gibson.
Nice.
I like loved that movie. I thought she was fantastic. And I love that movie. But Contact was one of those movies of like, I love science fiction.
Right.
And I also love it when science fiction comes into contact with like things that aren't science, like faith and stuff. That's like Interstellar is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I love that movie. That's one of my favorites.
Because it talks about love and what is, it's amazing. That whole conversation that, you know, Anne Hathaway's character and Matthew McConaughey's character talk about, you know, love and what is the scientific reason for love. Like it's just, I just love when science meets life and faith and things that aren't scientific. So I love the blending of those two. But I think now one of my favorite actresses is Cate Blanchett. I think I don't know of anyone that has the type of breadth of work and variety of work. You know, I saw Tar and it was like amazing, you know, and like, but then she can also be the bad guy in Thor. Like, I remember when she comes on and I was like, who is this? And I was like, it's Cate Blanchett. Like, I just like heard the voice and I was like, this person is amazing, but I can't recognize. And it was like, holy shit, it's Cate Blanchett. Like, she just blows me away with what
she's able great to and do. Everything. And she is.
And I don't know of anyone who can go from doing a Marvel movie to an Oscar movie to a Marvel to an Oscar. Like, it's just, like, I don't think I know of anyone who has that type of ability to truly mold and shape into completely different human beings. And, you know, and that is always like my, oh, I would love to be able to get there. You know, like, that's sort of like the gold standard of like, wow, to be able to have, you know, one, have the time and the ability to like spend, you know, like crafting and creating that character, but then also to be completely, you know, where you lose yourself, like where the audience finds you unrecognizable. That is like incredible.
She does it in every role too.
She does. She does. So she's absolutely one of my favorites, but you know, like growing up, when I was a kid, I mean, Sridevi was my absolute favorite actress, you know?
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, you know, like Chandani, you know, it was just like, that was, you know, but was that just because I was in love with her? I don't know. but yeah, but I think I've always been. Say it again?
I said, that's a whole nother podcast.
But yeah, but I think, you know, growing up was definitely Jodie Foster. Like when I was a kid, when it wasn't my career. But then once it became my career, Cate Blanchett, you know, but there's so many, you know, I just started, you know, the last season of Succession, but everybody in that is so good. No spoilers, but like everybody in that is perfection, you know, like, so I mean, seeing that type of work is just inspiring of like what's possible, you know, it's just like, and every little, like, I remember rewatching the last scene of season 3 of Succession because the little moment was like, everything was beautiful. And I was like, I have to watch that. I've got to look at their faces. And what were they like? It's just, you know, it's like, so I watch it as an audience member and as an actor. And it's just like being able to enjoy both so fully is just.
That's it.
It's just great. It's just like, just did fills
finish,
my heart up.
Did you finish Succession? Or are you
no,
still
I'm not. I'm not. I've only seen it. Yeah, we were slow. So we just started and we've only seen 2 episodes of the last season. So no spoilers. But no spoilers.
But my family's way behind. They're like on season 2 right now.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh my. We just finished it. And it's just like, oh my God. It's just such a terrific show. And it's everybody brings it in every scene and every episode. And it's like, those are the kind of things that I think will be coming to you, if not in abundance.
Yes.
But there are certain directors you've worked with, like Ava DuVernay, that you've had some amazing experiences. Are there directors, let's throw it out there, are there directors you are dying to work with?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I haven't even let my heart dream.
That's your heart dream. That's what it's about. Dream.
I mean, I would love to work with Steven Soderbergh. I like, he made like one of my, Out of Sight is this film, George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez film.
Yep.
I just fucking love it. Like it's there's like certain movies that I'm just like, it's like, it might not be on any top 10 list, but I just love it. I love what he was able to do, these moments and everything. I would love that. I mean, obviously I would love to work with like, you know, I can't even remember. What is it? Taika Waititi? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. Taika, who did all the Star Wars stuff recently. And
Exactly. Like, he just seems like a really fun, exciting director who would be doing exciting things. So I think that would be incredible. I mean, those are like the two off the top of my head.
Howard Spielberg.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, those are obvious. I mean, of course.
Got to throw him in there though, Malzahn.
Spielberg would be great. You know, like, I mean, heck, Wes Anderson. Why not? You know, like, I would love to do one of those like fun little moments, you know, that everybody has been making TikTok videos about, you know. Like,
well, Malzum, this will all come to you because you have the acting chops. You definitely can flex when you need to. And you know what? We're so thankful for you to be a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Anytime you have something featured, anytime you want to share it, please come back. This is what this whole platform is about. It's about kind of taking us along with you on your journey as an artist. And thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. You're terrific. And keep it up.
Thank you for having me. This was such a blast.
And for the record, I was so bummed I missed your play. And I will never miss the next one. I had family in town. I couldn't miss.
No worries. It's all good.
I promise you, I will see you in the next thing. Whatever it is, TV, film, or stage, I will be there in full force, okay?
Thank you. This was such a pleasure.
All right. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Malzum, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence right here on LA Talk Radio.